Hi, this is Dave Carr of Raging Cider and Mead in San Marcos, California, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 151. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. This week, we'll be based with our featured guest in San Marcos, California. That is Dave Carr at Raging Cider and Mead. But before all that, let's catch up with a little bit of news out and about in Ciderville. Next week, on November 1st, the New England Cider Tour is rolling north from my spot of Ciderville into New Hampshire and Vermont. We leave and return from Greenfield, Massachusetts, because the following day is going to be the start of Franklin County Cider Days, which is an all-weekend event. So we're doing a full-day cider tour to different makers in that area, and we culminate the end of the evening with a cider dinner at Fable Farm Fermentory. We're going to have like roasted chicken from the hearth, all farm-to-table delights, and having different ciders from Fable Farm, Tin Hat. We'll have some from Farnham Hill because I'm picking up some growlers to go to share there. Eden Cider. It's going to be amazing. And I'm also bringing a bottle of Calvados that we're going to then have with ice cream. We're actually going to pour the Calvados on the ice cream because, dang, Ciderville is all about abundance, right? We're going to just pour that Calvados on the ice cream. And I want to tell you, that is a nice way to enjoy Calvados. Some people might be like, you're going to be pouring it on it. What, yeah, don't you sip it on the side? Well, no. Sometimes we do, but on this one we're not, because we're going to just be in that heartbeat of abundance and foodie delight. Geez, I'm just drilling at the thought of it. Not to kind of bum you out if you're not going, and it's not my intention, because actually there's always a sunny side of Ciderville, and that is the fact that you can start signing up now for next year's tour, which will be taking place right before Cider Days again. There might be a half-day tour starting on the Friday of Cider Days, but of course, this Totally Cider Tour is not part of Franklin County Cider Days. It's something I'm doing separately to really welcome the people that are coming from all over the world to attend Cider Days. So you could sign up at Cider Days, because I'm going to be at Franklin County Cider Days all weekend. I am on the committee for helping that event go forward, and I'll be moving all around. So just look for me. I don't know. You probably don't know what I look like, but you'll probably see me wearing a jacket that says Cider Chat on it, or see you in Ciderville. That might be one way to find me. I might have a table. I'm working on having a table set up at the Cider Sing on Friday night. I'll also be at the Cider Schmooze walking around, and I'm going to have like a little pad with me. So if you want to sign up early, I'll have like an early bird, probably $25 off the cider tour for next year. I haven't worked that out between now and then. I will figure that out. But if you want to start thinking about attending Franklin County Cider Days next year, which will be the 25-year anniversary gala affair, this would be a nice way to kind of come into New England. But in the meanwhile, instead of moving too far forward, the big thing is this year, the New England Cider Tour. If you delayed, there might still be hope, and I may be able to get you on this tour. So do let me know, but you have to contact me directly. Send an email to Rhea@ciderchat.com, and Rhea is spelled R-I-A. Again, if you are interested at all in going on next week's tour, send me an email. And I don't know, I guess there's always a possibility that we get even more people and I have to get another cider mobile. That could happen. But in the meanwhile, don't hesitate. If you have a hankering and you think, dang, I don't want to miss out on that. I don't. Why did I wait so long? Send me an email, Rhea@ciderchat.com. Last week's episode was called Hallelujah, 150 Episodes of Cider Chat. And I was celebrating and doing a big raise of the glass to all the people over the past year who have helped me get to that point of 150 episodes. And I wanted to call out some other folks that I didn't happen to get to mention at that point. This past year, Jake Mann, who is the son, a grandson of long-term apple growers in Monterey Bay. I connected with him for the first time. He is on the podcast, an episode. I'll put a link in the show notes to that. You should listen to him. He's really inspiring. He has a long history of orchard care, and he is helping out the cider makers in that region like nobody's business. He's into organic. I adore Jake. I adore what he's doing, and I really appreciate his support. So there'll be more on that because I will be returning to California this December, it looks like, with my mom. My mom is elderly and needs care. She lives with me half the year and then goes with my dear brother, who just adores her as a good son would, and spends the winters there. So that's a little bit of a personal thing about me, but mom needs that kind of transport. So I will be transporting her to the West Coast coming up and making sure she gets safely there and hopefully meeting up with Jake and all the other makers. So stay tuned for that. Another person that I need to make a correction of is Joe from Portugal. I said that his name was Jim, but he's actually Joe, and he is making cider there. He also went to the International Hall of Gala Apples and is trying to entice me to go next year. But of course, I'm going to need some sponsor to do that for next year to go to Asturias. He said, let me see. Next year, in order to have a full boat Fandango covered, we have to find a cidery that will send you cider to the event on your behalf. Yep, that's how it's done, folks. A cidery that would send cider to Asturias on my behalf so that some of the costs can be covered. So we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But what he did, he bought and shipped two cases of Sidra Vadia to Asturias just to make sure I qualified for the event. And he also sent his own cider as well. And all went well. So thank you. Thank you for that inspiration, Joe. I appreciate it. But more importantly, he just recently upped his contribution to Cider Chat via the Cider Chat Patreon page. If you recall, originally he was at the $3 level. Then he went to the $3.27. Now he is donating $3.57 per month. Now, I will say every bit helps. And I so appreciate it because actually, Joe, you just gave me a reason to talk about Patreon. So thanks again. You are a good chap. I really appreciate it. It's awesome. Patreon is a page where I am open to your participation. It'd be nice to get another patron there. It's been a while. You could also join the Cider Going Up campaign as a business if you'd like, and it all goes to helping this podcast stay on the air. And you could be like this guy, Joe from Portugal, who just upped his campaign to $3.57. I mean, frankly, if everybody listening right now donated $3.57, that would be an amazing thing. So never underestimate the power of the people. That's what it's all about in Ciderville. And one other business I'd like to make mention of, they were the first to step forward and support this podcast, and that is Cider Cellars based in the USA. They are importers of quality cider from the UK.
Cider Cellars Imports, celebrating British craft ciders.
I'd like to raise a big glass to both Linda and Tiger for supporting Cider Chat early on. If you're interested in imported quality ciders, look it up. It's spelled cidercellars.com. They are online and they are very accessible. Wonderful people. Thanks again to you both. Last July, I was in California, Southern California, if you will, visiting family for another family wedding. There was four weddings last year, including my own. But that was on the East Coast, a little bit easier to get to in your own home port. While I was there, I made time to visit two cideries. The first one was Ironbark Cider Works, based in Claremont, California. That is run by Kat Fleming, and she is just a hoot. Her cidery is a really welcoming place for everyone. Just walking through the door makes you feel like $1 million, and that is reason alone to visit Ironbark. The following day, I headed down to San Marcos, California, where Raging Cider and Mead is, to meet up with Dave Carr. The cidery was closed that day. He has a tasting room that is open Thursday on, and we were meeting, I believe it was on a Wednesday. So you will hear us going into this conversation as I'm walking the door, checking out the scene, and pretty excited to meet this guy and to hear what he's doing and to taste some of his ciders, just to get to know what his story is. So without further ado, let's get ready for this chat and fill our glasses full and head to San Marcos with Dave Carr of Raging Cider and Mead.
Hello.
Hi, how are
Hello.
You?
Good, good. How are you doing?
Good.
Hey, look at this place. Sweet. Really sweet. Nice tall ceilings.
Yeah.
Nice visibility from the road.
Exactly.
That's huge. Look at that giant cooler. Boy, that's a serious cooler looking door. Big stainless door.
Well, that's my other business is sheet metal, so.
Oh, really? Okay, that
that's
makes sense.
All the cool sheet metal work in here.
Yeah. Wow, I know. That's like, what size door is that?
Custom. It fits my forklift to be able to grab a set there.
No kidding. It could go right in there?
Yeah.
Wow.
I might have to. I haven't had to yet, but I figured just in case. And we do the same. I actually got the walking cooler itself for $300 from the place behind us. They built some new condos.
No kidding.
And the old building up there had this massive walk-in. And they said, if you supply the labor to haul it off, you can have it for $300. So I got this whole walk-in and my walk-in outside where we store the apples when we get our apples in.
Score. Wow. So, that's huge. $300 for I have lots of friends who have had walk-in coolers, you know, trying to get away. But you have to, like, disassemble it, put it back together. It's a big job.
It's a pain in the ass.
Did you have the whole condenser unit or whatever?
No, we didn't get all that. I had my friend, was a refrigeration guy, so he kind of did a really cool system where it's residential condensers on the roof and then oversized coils in there, so it actually uses less energy and recovers super fast. So
nice, because it's hot out.
Especially with our Apple one, when we're loading apples in there, it'll be really hot outside, and the temperature will rise up to like 75 degrees in the cooler while we're loading in, and
then
we'll close the door and it'll be back down to like 34 degrees in like 7 or 8 minutes. So
wow, good. Well, you know what you're doing then. You're using your skills. Beautiful signage up there, Raging Cider and Mead Company, like in like a bronze background.
Yeah,
that's nice.
There you go, showing all those little and everything. So.
Your flight trays are all sheet metal, bent over with all that engraving. What about that wood background? That looks like that's like repurposed wood from somewhere.
I was going to use all repurposed wood, and then Home Depot started tearing this product.
And I was like, way to go.
Yeah, it was like cheaper than trying to go to all these places to get repurposed wood. I was like,
probably a lot easier too to deal with it.
Easier.
Yeah, nice.
So this is it, and there's a bathroom in the back that you use as
Yeah, that's it. And then we actually, at the end of the building, we press all our apples and everything down there.
Cool.
Jazzed about the fact that you're doing this wide range of ciders. And I walked in and you have, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, heights of barrels.
And 24 barrels here, yeah.
24 barrels, which is pretty righteous amount right there. You're not just doing barrel aging, are you?
No, we do some of our stuff we do in stainless, and then we'll go straight to our totes, and then we'll go from there into the bright tank and into kegs. So,
right.
But a lot of what we do, I mean, this is everything left from 2017 harvest right here, this wall of barrels and the barrel. I have 3 bourbon barrels over there, which I'm aging, a Jonathan, which I'm going to blend in with Jonathan I have in my red wine barrels. So.
Nice. So you have a couple different varieties. Are they all from, like, California, these barrels?
All of these are from Central California. I buy from a barrel company up in Santa Maria, which is Central California, mm-hmm. and he basically checks the barrels. He cleans them, and in some cases, I have a couple that are recoupered, and I purchase them from them, and he has very reasonable prices. So.
Bingo. Yeah, and those are, like, 50-gallon barrels.
Yeah, actually 60.
60-gallon?
Yeah,
okay.
59 and a half and 60, depending on if they're French or American. So
what has more, the French or the American?
I believe the American does. The American's around 60.
Of course, the American's bigger.
Yeah, of course.
Made in goddamn Texas, okay? All right, we're in California, which is pretty big, too.
So, and then we have the bourbon barrels. I have one that's from a distillery back east, and then the rest are from either or all from Ballast Point. So I have a rum and 2 bourbon barrels over there. And I also have some Hungarian oak barrels down there too. I do some special stuff in.
Nice. Yeah, and those are a little bit more squash.
Yeah, those only hold about 26 something gallons. I have a particular, well, you'll taste it, the Winola Scrump. I age in there for about 2.5 months at a time.
Nice.
So. I now have one of them filled with brandy for a Pomo project we're working on. So.
Okay. All right. A little distillation going on here too. Are you licensed to do both?
No. Well, with our license, within a wine license, you can create a brandy. But I work with Cal Spirits over here in San Marcos, and they did the distilling for me to my specifications. And
perfect.
Yeah, transferred it back to me.
Perfect. Ooh. Great. So when I see barrels now, the more that I'm learning about barrels, when I see barrels in a room like this, the first thing I think about is humidity. So how are you managing that with the oak? And because that's a really key element of a barrel, is to give it enough humidity and, you know, a consistent temperature, a cool temperature, and keeping that just right to
We keep the room at a pretty cool temperature, and it... largely until we hit the fall, this area stays fairly humid because our proximity to the ocean. So you can feel, if you go in my cooler and walk back out here, it feels like it's a warm, humid room right now.
Okay. But you're aware of that. You need like really being aware of that. You're not like...
Yeah, my future is to expand and further into the building and create actual barrel storage rooms where we can do a little bit more humidity control and we do a lot of fermenting in the barrels as well. Uh-huh. So we'll ferment in the barrels and age on the lees. So I want to create like a separate little area where we can really ferment at low temperatures to slow down and not volatilize the apple out of the cider. And then do our aging in a separate room. And then that would become probably an event space for us eventually as well.
Ooh, okay. And is that sheet metal, is that your business?
Yes.
Wow. How long have you been doing that?
That, pretty much my whole life.
Wow. What do you do exactly? Are you working for other bars?
Our main thing is we build restaurant equipment, bar equipment. I work for a lot of breweries building draft panels and taster flights. Then I also do a lot of residential work too, for countertops and hoods for homes. So.
Nice. And this... bar here, this is copper.
Yeah.
So you work with any kind of metal then?
Pretty much.
Ah, that's a beautiful art of itself. You know, it really, really is. And, you know, you coming in from that vantage point, it changes everything up. You probably built those barrel holders up there.
No, I bought those for really cheap from the same guys I bought the barrels from.
All right, good.
Well, I couldn't even touch those racks for the price that that guy sold them to me for. So.
All right, yeah. It's a little bit more difficult than one sees it. It looks easy to make, but I know it isn't. So let's just get a little like snapshot here. Southern California, are you a native of this area?
No, I was actually born in Toronto.
Oh, okay, so, you're Canadian.
Yes, I'm Canadian. Lived briefly in Houston when we first moved to the States. My parents are from England, and then lived here pretty much since I was 9 or 10 years old. So.
9 or 10 years old, yeah. in Southern Cal?
In Southern California.
Okay.
Yeah, Escondido, I lived briefly in Phoenix for a little bit, but have lived in this area for most of my life.
Nice. Well, you kind of have like the best of both worlds. Toronto, Canadians who are like some of the best people in the world.
Well, of course we are.
Yeah. Nice people. I mean, you have to put up with like the neighbors to the south, you know. You don't even want to go there. But yeah, I remember talking to you a little bit about that while I was up in Ontario. And that region has a big booming cider scene happening.
Yeah, that's one of my trips I want to make is up north. I haven't been back to Toronto since basically I was a kid, so I was talking to Ryan Muckman.
Yeah.
And so I want to, hopefully at some point, he invited me along to come visit while I was up there. So
mm-hmm.
that would be a huge, great trip to make. So.
Yeah. Where did you get the bite from the apple? Like, what? How that?
Actually, it really started when I was 13 and I went to England with my parents to visit family and then was out with either cousins or with kids of my parents' friends, and he went in a pub, and I was very tall, so basically it seemed like if your eyeballs were above the countertop, you got served. So, so I really never developed a taste for your basic ESBs, English bitters.
Yeah.
But I did develop a taste for ciders while I was there at that age. So I always loved ciders from then on. So.
Hmm. And did you realize that you're in Southern California where there's not necessarily a lot of apples growing?
There actually is, but it's in the mountains.
Up
here.
In the mountains, yeah. A ways out of here. Like, how far do you have to go to get those?
Well, from here, it's about an hour. From where I live, it's about a 40-minute drive.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
But where I live, actually, we're on the edge. We're on the edge zone of where you can grow apples. So, I mean, actually, I grow a little bit of apples here. So I have, surprisingly enough, I have some Dolgo crab apples growing out there in front, and they're doing fine. So.
Wow.
Where I live, typically we do well with apples. This has been a very strange year. The weather has been just an absolute disaster this year for us. We had our chill hours were split up by 5 or 6 weeks of warmth, like warmth we've never experienced before in the middle of January and the end of December. So it really just confused my trees. Most of them are doing okay now, but they've blossomed out very late this year, so I have no idea how that's going to affect them next year. But we have orchards we manage and farther up in the mountains at 4,000 and 5,000 foot levels, and they're all doing fantastic. In fact, some of the orchards up there look like we're going to have bumper years this year. So
good. Well, may it be so. That'd be awesome. And are those varieties, what style? Were they culinary, and you got some cider apples going on?
So, yeah, at my place I have... From years ago, we just farmed. We've lived up there for 30-some years. We built our own home, and we farmed that property. So we planted apples years ago just for eating. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, as I started to get more into cider, which was due, actually, to my wife becoming gluten intolerant.
Oh, wow.
I switched from home brewing to making cider. And so then once I started learning more about the cider apples, I started planting more and more cider varieties. So
you have some. You have
I don't have a ton in my place yet. The trees are still fairly young. This is the first year we were letting a lot of them start to produce apples, which, of course, it's been a rough year, so I don't know what we're going to get.
Yeah.
But the orchard we have, say, in Watai, which is around the 4,000-foot level, they had existing some great old trees, some like 100-year-old trees that are Newtown Pippin, full standard trees.
Wow.
And we had a Newtown Pippin tree we got 60-plus bushels of apples off of last year.
That's exciting. I've had some good Newtown Pippins from California.
Yeah, it's an amazing apple. And it does really well. I really like the flavor profile of it here. So, in fact, I'm getting ready to pull the barrels down and start carbonating and all that. So
great.
And then they also have wine sap, that same thing, 100-year-old trees. And then there's another orchard they planted 20-plus years ago, and it has, I have no idea what apples, because last year there was a late freeze and most of those trees didn't produce apples. So I'm kind of waiting with bated breath to see what we get this year.
Yeah, it's rough.
But between all of that, there's about 100 trees there. And then I have a suspicion that a lot of those are either Golden Delicious or Red Delicious. And the ones I did have a good idea, I've already top worked into cider varietals. I top worked one into Calaus, a few into Kingston Black. And Calaus is a Spanish varietal. Mm-hmm. And then Fill Barrel and Unknown Lemony Crab that we found up in Julian, growing on one of the guys I work with orchards. In fact, I have a 5.5-gallon batch of cider I made from it that I'm getting ready to, bottle as well. But it's a really cool, crabby, lemony apple. And couple others too. So, and then we planted 262 just pure cider varietals in there. So
nice.
So a lot of them either red flesh varietals or a lot of Kingston Black, Muscat de Bernay, and Plum de Renette.
So I mean, that's a bit of a haul. You know, an hour from here, the apples, not unthinkable by any means, because there's some cideries that we know are shipping juice in from overseas, and they you know, so it's not a big deal. But you know, when it depends on the scale that you are in business to do this. So are you driving in like a little like 4x4 pickup? Or
pretty much.
Yeah?
Yeah, 4x4, and we'll have a trailer. Sometime we'll hook up. We have a 16-foot trailer and we'll hook it up. So depending on what we're getting, we'll bring bins down. So we also have an orchard in Julian that's all 100-plus-year-old trees. And there's wine sap there. There's about half of the trees are pears. And of those pears, 16 of them are wild seedling pears, so they are really tannic and tart, but they're actually full of sugar, but you can't even tell because of the grapes are. They're so tannic.
This plum jerkin that I'm drinking, 60% wild. They can't read.
Wild Choctaw plums.
Okay.
Which are a native plum to Georgia. Every tree, the plum, they all have similar flavor profile, but every tree, the plums may be red, they may be yellow, they may be red and yellow. It's just crazy looking mishmash of plums, but it's all the same variety. It's a Prunus augustifolia.
You become quite the orchardist there. Look at you, got the Latin going on.
Well, I'm a mycology freak anyway, sticks in my head. So.
You're like exactly where you're kind of like living your bliss here.
Yeah.
You know, you can feel it. I mean, you can feel it in the place. So let's see. So it has the plums, and then you have an apple blend.
Yeah, so that was our final. We had just a mound of apples left. It was everywhere from Empire to Jonathan to Wine Sap to Black Twig to Arkansas Black, just a huge mound of apples left over that didn't have a ton of each, and it wasn't really worth trying to press out a single varietal or anything. So we just did a kitchen sink pressing of apples at the end of the season. So we took that, and I used part of it for this blend. I used part of it for we've made a cedra. I'll give you a taste of that shortly. The culture I have, we just bottled a bunch of it, and we refilled the barrel with what was left from that pressing as well.
Wow.
And I used it for something else. I'm trying to remember what.
You're playing around, which is really cool. I want to talk about this plum jerkin. You know, what the color of it is, it's kind of like a light brandy a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you open up a plum and the sun hits it, that fleshiness there you have is kind of like brown, you know, a little bit orangey color going on. The color of the cider itself is just perfect in that way. Seriously, I mean, you know, you open the plum and there's that color right there. And the taste, I feel like, oh, thank you. Thank you, Jesus. You know, kind of a moment where it's just like, I need this. I need to kind of keep my, you know, when you're far away from home and you just need a damn good cider.
Yeah.
Thank you for making this.
Thank you.
Thank you for making it. I needed this sip. Oh. 6.8%.
Yeah. And that's more because of that pressing of the apples was at a fairly high Brix level. So.
Yeah. Really good. Really good. Well, if that's your first cider that I've had, I can only imagine I'm going to get
better and better.
Hopefully.
Are you kind of doing like whatever the hell you want, you know?
Pretty much. I'll be honest with you, I'm still learning. So, I mean, I did 20 years of home brewing, and then, like I said, I mentioned to you earlier, my wife had to go gluten-free, so I started messing around doing ciders. And at first, I started doing what everybody else is doing. I was just getting bulk, you know, like juice from the store and making cider and flavoring with different things. And then I ran into, there's another orchard-based cidery up in Julian called Julian Cider Works, which is not Julian Hard Cider. It's a separate
entity. Two different Julians, yeah.
And they actually... they press apples up there, and I started tasting what they were doing, and it reminded me of when I was a kid and having cider in England, and it got me really excited about it, and they worked with me. They actually, while I was working on getting my license, let me do my pressing up there. So my first stuff from 2016 was all pressed up in Julian, and then eventually when my licensing was done, we transferred it down here. So.
What are you pressing with?
I press with a bladder press,
and
it's a lot of work because it's a 180-liter bladder press, and we pressed 3,000 gallons last year, so.
Well, you know, so just so folks know what a bladder press is, it's like a basket press, but it has a big plastic bladder that you fill up with water.
We figured it out, and we can use compressed air. Actually, the guys at Julian Cider Works figured it out first, and so we just did the same thing because water's precious here.
That's true. You're in California.
Yeah.
So you're blowing it up with air, and that in turn creates the pressure to squeeze out the apple juice.
Yeah, you basically have a screen around the outside. You fill it up with your pumice, and as it's a big rubber bladder, as it presses out, it presses the pumice against that screen, and then the juice is expressed from the pumice.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. And most folks really like the bladder press because they find it easier to clean, easy to use. You're not cranking anything down. You're letting the bladder do the work, so to speak, in this case, air. But when you're doing that amount, it changes the whole dynamic.
Eventually. I mean, I'm actually looking at building my own, like a rack and cloth.
Those are kind of a lot of work too, the rack and cloth. It seems like the
but pneumatic. But I can do a larger one. Yeah. You can stack, and then while you're pressing, you can stack and make all your cheeses for another run. So
yeah.
So there's that's something I'm looking at this year or next year building. Until
I'm sure you will with your skill. My goodness, you know, you probably have enough sheet metal and a good. Bench press.
Oh, we have all kinds of stuff.
I know. It's like probably a candy store for a cider maker in that way. It's cool. So you're doing that, and what kind of scratcher or grinder are you using for your apples?
It's basically an overgrown garbage disposal, but I think it's Spital makes it. Okay. It's a German company, so it has just a big. It just comes up. We just dump the apples down the chute, and at the bottom is the grinder, and it spits the pumice
right
out the side. So, yeah.
And you're doing that all here on site now?
We do all that at the end of the shop,
It's kind of cool. You're kind of like an orchard-based cidery, in a way, that is...
We're in the city.
But you're in the city. I mean, I know, you know, there's a little bit of that happening at some other places, but you're doing that. You're like... For Southern California, if I think about it, you're probably the only one who's doing that in that way.
I would think so, because, like I said, Julian Cider Works, he's doing everything on it, but he's out in the middle of nowhere.
He can't be orchard-based.
He is 100%. And, I mean, like I said, we have our own orchard. We manage orchards, and then I work with a lot of other orchardists as well.
That's great. And you could taste it. And when you taste an orchard-based cider, and it's really what I gravitate towards, because it's really showcasing the apple and not just... All the additions that go on there, and you know it's fresh pressed local juice that has a total different chemistry and vitality than anything being shipped in from the beautiful parts of La La Land out there.
And the funny thing is, you look at our stuff. I actually just switched that. I had a Golden Delicious that was on there that we just put the Plum Jerkin on. That was 10.5%, but that's just 100% because of our local terroir. Because when it's time to harvest in Northern California, they're dry as well, but we get very dry around harvest time, and it really dries up the apples. So we don't actually get as high a yield out of our apples juice wise, but my God, the sugars in there are just insane. We get Brix levels 18, 20, 20 plus. I had Hughes crab apples were 22, 23 Brix.
Mm-hmm.
It was
high, very
high. Our northern spy that we pressed was around, I think, 19 bricks.
Right. I mean, that's dry farming. That's why the wine scene around here is so good, because you have that same kind of temperature and it's going to affect the apples in the same way. Now, right now, I'm looking up at your chalkboard. You have cider and mead because you are Raging Cider and Mead Company. And on the cider side, we're looking at 7 ciders on tap. Are you also bottling these guys to go?
We're actually just started bottling the first one we bottled was our Cedra that I mentioned.
Oh, okay.
So, and I'm waiting on labels. They just shipped today. I just got a message.
Oh, good. So you got TTB approval for that? Good.
So, and I'm actually going to submit this label.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Tomorrow. This will be our next bottle release. This is the Northern Spy.
Wow. So let's just talk about this little label here. It's kind of like a real photo of an apple almost, with one green leaf coming off, and then like a...
It's that, like the James Bondy kind of...
Swirl.
Because of spy. You know.
Yeah, okay. Right, Northern Spy. Are they all going to have that apple in the center and then something out on
no,
the side?
That's just going to be for this particular
for
one. What she did is she took a photograph of one of the Northern Spies that we pressed, and she kind of recreated it in a 3D...
Okay. Yeah, it's really lovely. It's like a spiral coming out or behind the apple. Really exciting. Kind of like Southern Cal, too. You know, it's got like that wave energy going on there. The big surf communities around here.
So we have that, and then we have that, like I mentioned to you earlier, that lemony crab. That's going to be another very small bottle release. And then deciding which will be next. Either I'm leaning towards a Newtown Pippin because I really love the way it's tasting. So
nice.
So that'll probably be our next one. And then we did a blend of Newtown Pippin and so one of the apples that is very, very much everywhere here in Julian's area, especially, is Golden Delicious, but it's the original cultivars of Golden Delicious. So when you harvest them, they're covered in russet, and they look more like their parent, the Golden Russet, than they do the modern-day Golden Delicious. And they have just an amazing flavor. So I did a Newtown Pippin blended with that apple, and it has just... The flavor profile is amazing.
Nice. Yeah. So is this all your cider right here in this room?
This is everything I have. I have 2 totes in there, and what's over there, and that's it. Oh, and then I have... Because it's already come out of tax, I have the Cedra stored down in my cooler at the end of the yard. So.
Okay. Now, today I'm here on a Wednesday. You're not open for business
Correct.
On Wednesday. That happens on Thursdays that you open up, right? And then it goes into the weekend. What are the cider drinkers like around in San Marcos, California?
So my base is actually a lot of people who don't like going to the stores and having the sweet kind of... mass-produced ciders that are available.
How do they know that you're even here, though? How did that happen?
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
And I really try to do social media. It's a tough world, and I'm an old person, so I'm not the best.
No. He does not look old at all. Cider, don't worry about that.
But it's been a little bit of an experience kind of getting the word out, but I'm developing now people who continually return, and they're like, I can't even drink anything else from anywhere else, and they'll just come back here to have our cider. So because they love the dry ciders, they love the tartness that are in some of them,
the tannins,
and this
gherkin, it's really got the nice tannins.
We actually macerated it down on the skins of the plums as well for a week, so we punched it down like you do when you're making red wine.
Yeah.
And so that also trying to extract some of the tannins out of the skins of the plums themselves. So.
Very delicate. You know, it's on my tongue. It's also on my teeth a bit. I can taste it. It's what you kind of strive for in a well-balanced cider, is that acid structure with the tannin. You got it going on there. I'm impressed. And the fact that you are that really unique cidery in a kind of a mini sea of cider makers, you know, popping up all around here. This is a really unique spot. So folks coming here should be pretty thank their lucky stars that you're doing this.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you for doing this. I've always thought, like, oh, what's David Carr doing? Oh, he's doing some kind of, like, funky, wild, you know. So are you working with a lot of different yeast varieties?
I'm 100% wild fermentation.
You're 100% wild.
Yeah. I do for my meats. Well, the sizer I made is also wild fermented. And I'm starting to get the courage to, because honey's so expensive, it scares me a little bit, but I've got a whole, actually my wife just bought it for me for my birthday, a whole book on...
He's walking over to a bookcase that's right next to the bar,
yes.
Which is super cool. There's a whole bunch of Apple books.
All wildcrafting brewer, but it's also, it has whole sections on capturing wild yeast. So I'm going to start playing around with that.
The wild crafting brewer.
Yeah.
That's been your kind of like your mini.
Well, that's my new thing I'm reading right now.
So. Nice. So you're working with wild yeast, which I love. Are you also managing that from the upstart with like sulfites? How do you do that? Because people hear that.
We're pressing.
Freak out.
We're pressing. I mean, it's basically a toss of the dice, but so far it's worked out fantastic. So I think.
So what do you think that? Yeah, what's that about? Because it could go two different ways.
It could go horrible. I actually think I have one batch of Perry up there that I should have paid more attention to, and it's probably going to go vinegar. So, but beyond that,
distill it now.
Well, it's either distill it or I may just let it go to a vinegar and then have a pear vinegar. So
sure.
We're actually going to start offering shrubs on tap, which is a blend of vinegar. And fruit syrup, and then carbonated, and so that'll be it's the original soda. Is
right,
what it is.
Right. So, you could do that.
So I can take the vinegars and use it for that as well.
That's
so
true.
I do
That's
have
true.
Some vinegars I've already made, and
nice.
So we're going to use some of those for the ones we're going to start with. But beyond that, yeah, it's just test them and I see where they're at. But I mean, I think for me the wild fermentation offers so much more complexity to what you're drinking, because when you're having just one yeast fermenting, is for me it seems a little one-dimensional. And when you have anywhere from 6 to 20 different things fermenting and adding flavor
mm-hmm.
into what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
I think it becomes like such a more complex drink. So.
Absolutely. So are you leaving the gross lees in the barrel?
And yes.
So let's just go through the steps. You bring the apples, you're pressing, so you're bringing in that terroir there from your kind of house yeast and wherever the fruit's coming from. You're doing some maceration?
With some of the stuff, I'll do maceration where I'll ferment with skin. Especially some of these apples I have, like Anna and someone, they have some decent tannins. It's an apple that grows here by the, you can grow them on the coast.
Nice.
But it has some decent tannins in the skin, not in the flesh at all.
Mm-hmm.
But so what I'll do is I'll take that and I'll throw some of that skin back in, and then I'll just ferment on that and try and draw what tannins I can
mm-hmm.
out of the apple. So.
And you're starting with a clean barrel to begin with.
Correct.
And
it
probably you never have any
except
empty
for my Cedra.
Okay.
The Cedra, we empty it and we just refill right back in because I want to maintain that culture.
That culture in there.
Yeah.
And maceration, for anybody listening, that's where you once you press the apples and you have the pumice, or, you know, some people like let the apple sweat. It's another form of maceration too, but it's actually the pumice and you allow it to sweat sometimes 24 hours, 48 hours, depending on the maker's wishes there and what they're seeing, and it'll brown up the pumice, and then thus the juice will be a little bit more brown. And this is something that's really favored in more traditional styles of cider making.
Yeah, and we do that. I actually do that a lot with the Perrys. When we do Perrys as well, I macerate and let them sit for 12 hours and let them brown up. But it also, especially with those wild Perrys, the tannins are really harsh, so it softens the tannins when you're doing that as well.
Absolutely. Cool. So you do that, you press it, and then you're just pouring it right into your barrel.
We're either pouring directly into the barrels when we're going to do fermentation in the barrel, or
mm-hmm.
I have totes that we'll press and put the juice in, and we'll store the totes at like 33 degrees until our fermenters are clear. The totes are basically the same size as those fermenters I have up there.
Okay.
So once
so kind of like an IBC?
Yeah, IBC tote.
Yep,
yeah,
that's
so
what you have. And you have
those
a stainless one.
Stainless ones, and they're actually jacketed on the back so I can keep them in a colder temperature. And
Where'd you get those? Those are really sweet.
They're actually made in Oklahoma, so.
No kidding.
I was going to build them myself, but then when I saw their price, I was like, oh, I can't even build them for that much.
I haven't seen anybody with the steel, like, version of IBC.
First time I came across them is a winemaker here in Escondido who I really respect. They're all wild fermentation wines, and and their wines are amazing. So that's the first time I came across them.
Who's the manufacturer? Do you know?
Metalcraft, Custom Metalcraft out in Boca.
Custom Metalcraft. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Nice. So you store it there for whenever you, then could like move it to the barrel. That's essentially what you're saying.
Yeah, well, so the barrels will press and pour right into the barrels, bring them in, and they assist our fermentation.
Okay.
So, some of the stuff that's going to go through the stainless, we'll put into totes, and then when the fermenters are ready, we'll fill up the stainless tote, ferment it. And like I said, they're actually jacketed on the back so I can control the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, I decide, am I going to go straight to the bright tank, or am I, you know, into a secondary tote, or am mm-hmm. I going to go into wood? So, because mm-hmm. not all of this is fermented in place. Some of
okay.
it is. Like, I have my Perry that's on tap now. These two barrels here are Chardonnay barrels. I took 120 gallons of the Perry that was on tap. It's on tap now, and I put it into the Chardonnay barrels to age.
You have the lees in there. Are you doing batonnage? Are you...
I've actually been doing a little bit of batonnage with some of them. Some I've left. Like, I've had, when I did do batonnage, I had some really cool results because some of the, I'll give you a taste of one actually. It's cider and mead. We did the same thing where we collected, kind of like the French do, where they collected the apples and they just let them sit and sweat and basically start to ferment as an apple.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's got, I need to refine it, but it got some really cool stuff going on. And I didn't do any batonnage. It was just fermented in place on top of the leaves.
Nice. So that is that same kind of color as the plum gherkin, that like kind of like rich amber.
Yeah, and then we press that and let them sit for a little bit as well on the pomace before we ground it up, let it sit on the pomace, and then we press it out. So.
Mm. Yeah, because people could be a little scared to like leave it on the leaves because it could just... Then start
it
going
can go bad, yeah.
The other direction. So that's something I would be a little nervous to do without stirring it in, but you're doing it. So let's see. So this was not stirred in.
This is not stirred in.
But interesting.
Yeah, it's a little bit more phenolic than I would like to have it a little bit more apple character, but
yeah,
I think
that's because that's just kind of driving
going
it.
Forward, I think it's a really good basis to work with and experiment with.
It's very forward in your mouth, you know, so it doesn't give you that full mouth experience, which the lees are all about, giving you that umami kind of softening,
yeah.
The acidity there. So, I mean, that's when you're going onto that, you know, different techniques will lend different characteristics to it, and it's a damn good cider, you know. I'm going to turn it down. It's very drinkable, but it's very mouth forward, you
yeah.
know, and it drops very quickly. And there could be a lot of reasons behind that, but
I think it's actually, if I was to do it again, I would not let it be so dry. I like things dry, and I would probably try to retain a little bit more sweetness, and I think that would give a little bit more of the mouthfeel
as
well.
Yeah, the mouthfeel. Yeah, but it's, you know, tart, it's going on, and it does have that sweetness. I mean, you're saying you like fermenting it dry, but there's sweetness there.
Yeah, there's a residual sweetness in
Definitely.
There. It's not dry by any
yeah,
means, but
no.
It's not semi-sweet either. It's kind of that off-dry kind of world. Yeah.
Which is what we're all very happy to have.
Yeah.
You know, we want to have that.
Yeah, cool. What I need to do is to coax out a little bit more of the apple flavor to stay in there.
Yeah, well, that is the secret pudding piece.
Yeah.
So what is this called that I'm drinking?
That's the, well, I call it L'Enfant de Julien, which is the Julien's child. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's off-drying floral barrel fermented. Aged on the lees, awesome funk. Yep, 8.4%.
Yep.
And I'm not sure what that says there.
Complex.
Complex, okay, all right. Yeah, well, it is kind of complex, you know? It makes you kind of like...
Well, there's a lot of different flavor things going on there.
Mm-hmm.
That was just kind of a crazy blend of apples from my friend's orchard. And what they actually have a U-pick. And the same thing, the trees are... In fact, they have the oldest tree in San Diego County is in their orchard. It's a Gravenstein that's like from 1880.
Nice. Wow.
So it's a blend of everything that grows in their orchard, including one wild apple tree that reminds me a lot of Kingston Black. So that it actually is their neighbors, but most of it overhangs their property, and so there's all these apples hanging there. And,
yeah. Drinking your ciders, what I could taste is that you have excellent barrels.
Yeah, thank you.
You have really good wood going on there. You know, it's subtle enough. It's not like over oaked. It's really holding that apple in a really delicate way. And with this one here, it's doing the same thing, really good.
I actually left that in the barrel for 14 months, so.
Wow.
It's probably a little bit longer than I would. I have another one going in the same process right now, and I'm going to probably pull out here in the next like month or so. So.
Yeah. It has a nice nose.
I have a visitor. Hey, Carl.
Hey.
How are you? This is Rhea. She does the cider check. He's a cider maker and...
Awesome.
And cider drinker.
And cider
drinker. Nice. Cool. Good to meet you.
Yeah, me too.
Is this your cider?
No. This is from England.
Oh.
Yeah, he just came back from England, France, New York.
Cider areas.
At that moment in the middle of the recording, Dave takes the can that Carl brought in from the UK and pours he and Carl a taste of the cider, while I sit there and wait.
All right.
That's really sweet and juicy. Interesting.
There's one side of me that says, oh, Rhea, hold it back. Keep it all rosy and peaches out there in Ciderville. And you know, truthfully, 99.9% of the time, it is. But when I am stopped in the middle of a recording where I had set aside time to take away from my family, hell, from the beach, I was at California, and traveled all the way from my spot of Ciderville on the East Coast out to California to sit down and have a conversation where I was then going to put it on air, as I am right now, and help this cidery promote their wares, and then to be treated with absolute disregard. All I could say straight from the heart is, dude, that is freaking rude. You don't do that to people. You don't do that around a bottle of cider. And I will swing this way and say, okay, maybe these guys were having an off day. But at that moment, I became invisible. What do? Do you just kind of like tuck that away underneath the sheets and say, oh, you know, suck it up, Rhea, and don't go on air with that? Or do you actually share a little bit of my experience in putting out this podcast to you? And after 3 years and now 151 episodes, cripes, I'm not going to go there. You're going to get it as raw and as real as the people I am out there speaking with. So let this be a little moment of kind of like, let's be civil and let cider, which is a shared drink, be shared. If I'm at a recording with anyone, whether you are commercial or not commercial, and we're taking that time, you can be sure that I will not walk out of that conversation and step away and engage unless it is an absolute emergency. These guys, again, might be having an off day, and I'm not going to hold it against Dave Carr. In truth, if you listen to the whole first half of this conversation, we were ripping through it. It was good, and, you know, I was enjoying his ciders, no doubt. But at that moment, to be disregarded, it just throws it to the wind, and it changes the palate. Kind of like when you're sipping a cider, and then you're given cider, I don't know, in a dirty glass. That's kind of how it felt. And frankly, I was in shock. So be it. I'm in perfect Ciderville. And yet, I'm going to keep on keeping on. I hope that you don't hold any hard regards against me, but my boat, my rules. When I'm out there in Ciderville, I'd like to be treated with a little bit of respect and kindness. It's the least one can do when I'm putting so much work into this podcast to kick it out every week. I've been holding on to this episode for a while, thinking, should I post it or not? Well, hell, I just did. And don't let it fully hold you against Raging Cider and Mead. He's got it going on, or the guy's trying to do a good thing. But just because you're trying to do all that does not mean that one can disregard someone who is helping promote cider. It could have been me or anyone else, and this time it was me. But don't fuck with this cider podcaster. And please extend the same courtesy to my fellow cider writers. We're helping people promote when sometimes we, and more often than not, we have to pay for those ciders ourselves. There's something wrong with that equation, and I certainly hope it changes soon. If you'd like to see a list of the ciders that were available at the time while I was there at Raging Cider and Mead, go to the show notes for this here episode 151. And there you'll see a photo I took of the cider list that was above the bar. And the next time I get to see Dave Carr, I certainly hope we'll be able to raise a glass and move this behind us and keep civility forward in Ciderville. And whenever there is a cider bottle out there and there is someone out in the corner, that you make sure, you make damn well sure that you reach out and you say, here, would you like to try this? This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Yeehaw!